Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, our interesting customers pop in to rent something, and we go through the films that they've loved across their life. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? How's it? Welcome to the video store. My name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And once a week, we get behind the counter of the video store to talk about the movies and the series that we're loving. I'm usually joined by my friends here behind the counter. Today, it's just me, because today we've got a special episode. We have Jordi and Gabriella popping in a moment. They are director and producer duo, and their latest film, De Quicksilvers, is going to be in cinemas around the country from the 1st of May and will screen at the Bioscope. And so it'll be lovely to have them pop in a moment for us to chat through the film as well as all the other things that they're doing in their life. We love here at the video store to have these conversations with industry professionals so that we can also help you understand how these things get made, what life is like behind the curtain or between the takes, so to speak. So if you aren't familiar with them, we really hope that over this chat you are excited to watch De Quicksilvers, and you've learned a little something about what it means to be a producer, what it means to be a director. But for all of those who are listening for the first time, welcome here to the video store. Our usual episodes are us talking pretty much uninterrupted about the films and the series that we're watching and just the entertainment world in general. But we hope that if you are friends with Jordi and Gabriella, that you get a little bit more out of a chat like this as we break down the film itself and talk about film and TV in general, the stuff that we're loving. So I think let's waste no more time. This is Jordi and Gabriella popping in to rent something. How's it, guys?
Hello.
Hey,
hello.
How are you guys doing?
Yeah, all right. And you?
We've got Jordi and we've got Gabriella.
Thanks for having us.
It's so cool to be connected. And it's so cool to talk properly, because I've found that we've seen each other many times, often in the lobby and in passing and at film festivals and things. It's nice to actually have an uninterrupted 40-minute odd chat to talk about what we're doing.
Definitely. We don't often, I feel like, in the industry actually just take a seat and talk about it. It's like we're so on the go that it's actually just nice to sit down with other filmmakers, other people, and just talk.
And what I'm interested in and what I want to chat about is your movie. You've got De Quicksilvers, which is going to come out on Workers' Day, right?
1st of May, correct.
1st of May, where the ticket prices are going to be not as expensive as we thought they were going to be from the 1st of May, because we don't have that extra 0.5% VAT.
Correct.
That's exciting.
True.
Small victories.
Small victories here and there where we can take them. I'm very excited for this film. Jordi, this is a film you've directed. Gabriella, you're involved in the producing of it, right?
Yes, we also co-wrote it, Jordi and I, with Marista van Eerden. So yeah, this is something that we've been involved together as a team for a long time.
Okay, how did this all come about? Because this is it's primarily, the language is Afrikaans.
Yes.
How Afrikaans are you guys? And this is a debut feature for you, hey Jordi, because you've done documentaries up until
That's
now.
That's correct, yeah. We've done a feature documentary, we've done many Afrikaans short films, and now this is the first feature narrative.
Okay, so you've done some Afrikaans shorts. I've missed that. Okay, how did this birth itself?
So it actually happened quite organically. So the Afrikaans short films that we did were done through Silver Skim Fierce, which is a fantastic platform just for emerging filmmakers, where they really just give you the space to create some really fantastic short film work.
That's and largely endorsed by CakeNet, hey?
Completely in CakeNet.
Because, okay, it's completely their thing because those products will then all be screened. It's their way of kind of producing content.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful way also just to, you know, often you make a project, you put it out there and you're not sure who's going to see it. But the amazing thing about this platform is that the commissioning editors and everyone at CakeNet and MultiChoice are watching the work. So it also helps build those relationships because you know some people have seen your work.
Yeah.
So that's really how this project came about. And we worked with this wonderful actress, Leda Buerta, who is the star of De Quicksilvers.
Yeah.
And we worked with her on our short film. Okay. And she was just a fantastic kind of force of nature. She was the spirit. She was enthusiastic. She was on the ball. And we just kind of, after the short film, looked at each other and we were like, how can we work with this incredible veteran actress again?
Yeah.
And through that, we discovered the concept for De Quicksilvers. And yeah, we pitched it to CakeNet and they jumped on board.
Yeah, it's primarily a road trip.
Correct.
Film, and it's a fun comedy. Perhaps you can give what we call the back of the box, which is the description one would see on the back. how do you best explain the film?
So the film is about Elsa B. Marais, and she's just lost her husband. And the last thing that she has kind of to remember her husband by is this car that they used to go on road trips with around the country. And her son ends up taking the keys to the car away and wanting to get rid of the car. So she goes on one last hurrah with these other wonderful women in the community to Sutherland to see the stars while her son is kind of hot on their trail chasing them through the Karoo.
It's lovely. It sounds so fun. I've been really wanting to see it. And so I need to admit up front that this is a film in a rare moment where I haven't been able to watch it. There was a preview screening that Filmfinity put on, and I really wanted to go, but I was catching up on a lot of work, and I really wanted to see it in the cinema. But we are going to screen it here at the Bioscope. We're going to take it in its second week. So we won't take it from the 1st of May, but what I think is then the 8th. It's going to be screening at us, which
I'm very brave
excited
to
about.
Commit to screening a film that you haven't watched yet.
No, there's a few reasons. The one was like, I just know the quality of work that you guys have done. The documentary, I Am Here.
Correct.
Was just such a world-class documentary, and it was just you've proven your quality, and of course I can just see from the trailer and everything. So this is a rare moment, as I said, it's a rare moment where, as the Bioscope, I haven't had a chance to watch this movie, but I wanted to be a part of it, which is really cool. And you've had a chance to screen it at some festivals and stuff.
Yes.
How did that go?
Yeah, it was I think just to take a step back, Geordie mentioned Silver Scare and Fierce, and we did two short films there.
Yeah.
And I think this is just a great opportunity to kind of break the some conceptions about Silver Scare and Fierce, because that we had, we are two Jewish filmmakers making English films. And one of the cinematographers we'd worked with on a previous project said, have you heard about Silver Scare and Fierce? And we were like, no, that's not for us. Like, we're not Afrikaans filmmakers. And he was like, well, you don't have to submit the film itself must be in Afrikaans. These are for their short films, but you don't have to submit the concept in Afrikaans and you don't have to be an Afrikaans filmmaker. So I think for us, it was just a really wonderful opportunity because we submitted some concepts. We, one was selected. We made Liam Tissin Leerheit, which I think even screened here at the Bioscope.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next year, we made Fola Boris. We made two short films through that process. And as Geordie mentioned, then it's such a fantastic way to meet the commissioning editors, but also while you are making the film, you are teamed up with industry mentors. So they're industry professionals that are giving you advice. And again, that was just something we can only really see in retrospect, helped us with just understanding how the industry works, networking, having connections, you know, at the, you know, now it's easy to look back and see, okay, those two short films were actually stepping stones to getting this feature film made, even from a production standpoint, because we had that, we met people. So when we did then submit, we submitted this concept just as a, you know, unsolicited concept on the multi-choice portal, which anyone can submit concepts.
Oh, cool.
And I think because they had seen our work at Silver Scream Fears previously, and seen that we can, you know, the either it's the caliber of the work or the type of films we make, or that we can complete things within a deadline.
Yeah.
They kind of vet people out through the Silver Scream process.
And it's knowing that you've got the capacity to execute, and
exactly,
and that you're really going to take this seriously.
So when we then got a development contract through, for CakeNet, and then they then greenlit it for production, and then they decided that it would be one of the Silver Scream Fierce feature films, and every year they have like five films that premiere at Silver Scream Fierce.
Cool.
So that was the first place where this film screened last year, August.
Okay.
And it was really wonderfully received. It had lots of nominations, including Best Feature, and it won the audience favorite.
That's a goodie.
Which for us, we always love winning the audience
favorite. When you're making that kind of movie.
Yeah.
When you're making a heart warmer, like a sort of feel you in the heart, then you want to get that award. Yeah.
Definitely.
So yeah, that was for us a big win, because we also put in, because we know it's for an Afrikaans audience, and as mentioned, we're not Afrikaans, so we put in so much time also with the co-writer Marista, making sure that it is culturally nuanced. But also so it will really feel and like resonate with the Afrikaans community, but also resonate with, you know, all South Africans and internationally too. So to win an audience choice, just to know that we ticked that box was fantastic. Yeah. And it also won, I think, best hair and makeup and best
sound.
Yeah. Yeah, that was its premiere and really well received. And then it was at the Joburg Film Festival recently, and now it will be having its cinema release. And then next up will be, it'll go into CakeNet and Showmax and DSTV Box Office, etc. But we really, really encourage people to watch it in cinema, because there's nothing like sitting with an audience, having your full attention on the screen, laughing together, crying together. So,
And what's cool is we've got this one particular signature event, which I think this is a funny anecdote, called Knit In Cinema, which is a really simple concept. I've seen it happen in other cinemas around the world. I saw it on the internet and was like, oh my God, we could totally do this. Which is basically you leave the lights on over the seats so that people can knit. And we've just had such successful, really great Knit In Cinemas where young, old, male, female, white, black, everyone comes. It's this beautiful mix and everybody crafts and knits. And there is this really cool event called Stupmark, which is originating in Pretoria, which is this kind of like knitting event. And so I was like, this is perfect. It's on the same weekend as the opening. So we've got to do a Knit In Cinema edition of the movie. And the moment I published it, the moment I put it out, I thought, wait, hold on. If you're not Afrikaans speaking, you actually might struggle to watch this movie, because you got to both look at your knitting needles and subtitles. But I think those coming will kind of know what they're in for.
Definitely. I think it's such a fantastic.
And it'll still be fun. But it was just one of those funny moments where I was like, wait, hold on. But it was certainly in its essence and in its energy, it's the right film for such a thing.
Definitely. I think you've hit the mark on the audience that will love the film, but also there is a little, I won't give it away, but there's a little something to hint to knitting in the film.
Oh, cool.
Which is also quite fun.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, so I think it ties in perfectly.
If only I'd seen the movie. But yeah, that's so exciting. And how was it for you, Geordie, moving from documentary to feature? Like, what were those like huge shifts in your head?
I think it's quite a massive jump, but I think the way that we approach story is similarly to documentary. Is we in crafting this story, we were very much as one would in a documentary, like we were in the research. So a lot of the road trip scenarios that are in the film actually came from interviews with us and people who have done a lot of like road trips to Sutherland and the funny things that happen on the way.
Sutherland is in the Cape. Where is it?
It's the Northern Cape.
Northern Cape, yeah.
Yes.
So we actually shot, we didn't actually shoot in Sutherland.
Sure. The movie magic happens. Yeah, but yeah,
we'll get there later.
But Sutherland's key because a lot of the Karoo is where we have this unprecedented view of the sky where it's uninterrupted. That's why that, what's it called? The telescope. What do you call it? SKA or?
SALT.
Yeah, SALT.
Its acronym is SALT.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a beautiful science research facility out in the middle of the Karoo for this reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where the ladies are headed to. The way we kind of approach these narrative films is to capture these slice of life, real moments. So we embedded a lot of that in the story. But, you know, coming from film school, like, you know, narrative has always been my kind of love. And
where was film school for you?
I was at AFTA in Cape Town.
Okay.
Yeah. So I always loved narrative, and I feel like for me, narrative is the dream. But like when it comes to documentaries, I feel like a documentary is this gem that sometimes you unearth something on the ground, and you really have to just mine it to bring it to life. So we've got to like. Just thinking of Gubby and I, we've got like a whole bunch of documentaries that we've been working on for a very, very long time in the background, developing them slowly and trying to unearth the stories. But at the same time, we've got these really, really fantastic narrative films that we're also bringing to life.
I love the idea of how that meticulousness and the research and the quest for some form of authenticity that you just have in you from being a documentary filmmaker you inject into your narrative, where it'll just feel that much more authentic, as opposed to, yeah, I can do this. You know, I can do a road trip movie, and you sort of think you know what you're doing.
Definitely,
but it has to be rooted in something.
Yeah. Just to add on to that, I previously many years ago I was working as a director's assistant and researcher at Bomb Commercials, which is no more. And I got the privilege of working with the great Tebogo Motlatsi, who sadly passed away. But his approach was very much, it almost seemed like a documentary approach to even commercials, where we would get a brief and often he would say, I want you to go on social media, on TikTok, on YouTube, and, you know, I want like realism injected into this concept, you know, this like real authenticity. So I think that's, you know, we always after that. And I think kind of very subtly I learned that from him.
Yeah, that's lovely, man. Have you done these trips to Sutherland? Have you gone and stargazed? Is that a thing in your life?
Well, we did it as part of the research for this.
Okay.
And it was, I encourage everyone to go to SALT.
What's magical about it?
It's the largest, they have the largest telescope in the Southern Hemisphere. Is based in Sutherland, so one can go and actually look at the like research facility and understand how it works and the research that's done here. And then it's like apocalyptic. They're little like stations that there's like Russia has a station and the UK has a station, and everyone's kind of there to in this perfect spot. Most people actually go there in winter. I don't know if we weren't brave enough or we're just going to pretend the timing didn't work out because it actually snows in Sutherland in winter. It's freezing.
Wow.
But you get the best sighting of the stars when it's cold because the atmosphere is clear or something like that. Don't quote me on that.
But that makes sense.
We were there. Just, I think, really was important for us to actually go there, even though we went there to see if we could maybe shoot actually on location there. So we went for a bit of a logistical recce, but also we were still writing when we went, and I think that really helps us just understanding. You get on a little mini bus, and the mini bus then takes you up to where the telescope is. And you don't get to see it through the main telescope, but you get to see it through, like a kind of,
Observatory.
Observatory one. And so I think for us, like, we also wanted the in the script for it to feel very authentic of like what actually happens when you go to an observatory and understand that process.
Sure. I don't know why, but my brain is thinking about those scenes in, it's very different, in A Real Pain. Have you seen A Real Pain?
Yes.
Yeah.
When they actually get to the museums, when they get to the Holocaust museums and how those places have to be treated in a very particular way. Obviously, I'm not even getting to sort of all the weight and the gravity of what those places were, which is the Holocaust museums, so to speak, and the sites of it, but more just how you treat those road trips and how you treat the moments when you get to these places. And lovely. One thing to mention quick at this point is whether or not there's anything that you guys have returned. You've come to visit the video store. Did you rent something from us? Have you watched something recently? Because often that also speaks to all the things that we're speaking about. Jordy, what have you been enjoying recently?
So my wife and I, we've been watching Shrinking on Apple.
Oh.
We're in the second season
now. How lovely.
It has just been the most incredible experience. I think the story, the characters, they are just so lovable. The dialogue is just so witty.
And
you're just like 10 out of 10. It's an incredible show.
It's the guy that was behind Scrubs. Bill Lawrence? I think it's Bill Lawrence.
I think so.
He's got his hands in Shrinking.
Amazing.
And so you, in the same way in which when you watch Scrubs, you kind of fall in love with these people. They feel like they're your best friends, and you also feel like you sort of love the love interest. And Shrinking does the same thing. Have you seen it, Gabriella?
But now, after this, maybe that's what I need to rent.
It's very smart. It's very smart. It's very quick. It's got Jason Segel in it. Who we know from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and Freaks and Geeks. It's got Harrison Ford in it. I love how...
it's a brilliant cast.
Imagine telling someone, even Harrison Ford, that like he's going to do Marvel movies and he's going to be on TV. He'd be like, go fuck yourself. Yeah. I'm not going to do that. I'm a movie star.
Well, back in the day, TV was like the... It's like offensive to tell someone that.
Totally, right?
They'd be on this silver screen.
But it just shows you just how much we have evolved.
Mm.
Where Harrison Ford is shining as this character in this TV show.
Yeah, I kind of think to myself, like, I just don't see that show without Harrison Ford. Like, I think he's just so perfect for that character, and the execution is just phenomenal. But I also think one of the creators in the show, or one of the writers, is Brett Goldstein, who's also, I think, in writing with Ted Lasso. So, also another brilliant show.
And we often talk about that in the podcast, where there's this, like, secret sauce. And the secret sauce is more often than not in the writing.
Of course.
We've been talking recently, as we build up to the new Wes Anderson, the fact that the early Wes Andersons that we love were injected by writing contributors like Owen Wilson, who are able to root these quite fantastical, very stylistic stories and people in some heart. You know, as much as like The Life Aquatic is, you know, this really sort of silly old homage to early National Geographic and early ocean explorers, it's actually a story about a father and a son. And it's kind of rooted in this real special relationship, and how recently he's kind of lost a lot of that. It's all concept these days. So I'm really wishing more from the Phoenician Scheme, which is coming out at the end of May. But Brett Goldstein is one of those like secret source people.
Phenomenal.
And I also love, and I don't want to give too much away if you haven't gotten to this part yet, but he then becomes a character in Shrinking.
Yes.
And that was very similar to how he became his character in Ted Lasso, which is that he was just a writer and he was like, I can do this. Like, I can be the guy. Like, I don't know whether they couldn't find someone else, but he was like, I can be Roy Kent.
Yeah.
Because I've kind of written myself into this.
Yeah. I'm sure he puts in a good word for himself in the casting process after writing
it. but it doesn't feel like it's the plan. It doesn't feel like it's the original plan, but it's like, I can do this because I can act.
Definitely.
And I sort of understand what we're trying to do here. No, but any TV show that has, I don't think it's the whole band, but it's effectively Death Cab for Cutie doing the theme song. you know is going to be a special movie. I mean, a special TV show.
Amazing.
No, I love Shrinking. It's on Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
And I think out of all the streamers, Apple TV Plus has got far greater stuff kind of per head or per capita, whatever the expression is. It doesn't have a lot, but the stuff that it has is all really good, in my opinion.
Definitely. I've been very slow on catching up. We've just kind of got it. But like I'm saying, there's the studio now. And
I was about to say, you should then get started on the studio, which I have started
Severance
on.
As well, which I haven't seen. There's so many great shows.
But the studio is interesting. That's Seth Rogen. And I think for you guys behind the scenes producing and putting projects together, you'll have a very different unique view on that, which is this, like, immediately in episode one, he's completely compromised. He wants to make art, but he's got the corporate interests and he immediately has to sell his soul. It's like, it's quite heartbreaking, but it's lots of fun. Gabs, what have you been enjoying?
I recently watched Adolescence.
Okay.
Which I think when I started watching, you know, it was so, I think when you watch it as a filmmaker, it's difficult to not like focus on the camera and that it's all in one shot. And, you know, you straight away are thinking, how did they get the camera from that room to that room? How did they set up the lighting? How do they really get everyone to not just know their lines, but to trust the actors if they do forget their lines, how they're going to improvise? How do you do that with such a young cast? But what I was so impressed with is that very early on into watching, I actually was able to switch off my filmmaker brain, not intentionally, but I just got so lost in the story. I very rarely get emotional when I watch, especially TV, because, like, you know, you're holding your phone in one hand and you just finished dinner. Yeah. But the last...
That last episode's brutal.
Last episode, I cried. I can't tell you another film. I've cried. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm just not a crier in general, and like, especially not on TV. I don't know if it's because, you know, like, I recently became a parent, and then it's really a lot of that last episode, without spoiling it, is around our responsibility as parents and in like raising a child, and how much is a child's personality, and how much is.
And what could we have? What could we do?
Yeah.
What could we have done? And a lot of it is them going, but we were good. But we tried our best. But we were good parents. Where we were good, weren't we? Yeah. And Jesus, it is heartbreaking. How old are your kids?
I have one 10-month-old little girl.
Okay.
So maybe it's just all very fresh for me thinking about the future. And,
okay. So also then the production, this must have been all during the production of Quicksilver.
So Jordy, Jordy and I have, maybe just Jordy has a knack for having children while we are filming. I think we shot this film and got back and Jordy had a baby girl, I think as we got back from...
2 or 3 weeks after.
2 or 3 weeks after filming. And then delivering the film, we delivered the same week I delivered my baby. So that was... Also, we both had baby girls within a few months of each other while filming.
Man.
But yeah, we were like, you know, I was like waddling around the Karoo quite pregnant while we were filming.
Okay. And did it feel quite stressful for you, the producing of this particular film?
I think we... We had a really good line producer. Anna Marie was our.
What is a line producer?
So the line producer is organizing like the day to day logistics, making sure that everyone is booked and all the contracts are signed, and that we are keeping in budget. Mm. Whereas the like kind of lead producer. Is more contractual stuff with CakeNet, making sure that
bigger picture stuff.
But yeah, like I really enjoy being on set and not just kind of sitting back and hearing what's happening. So and also because just the way Jordy and I work together, it was wonderful for us to be there together as a team. There were, you know, producing this was difficult because the we had quite a contained budget for a not contained film. A lot of people do like a full commission from CakeNet. It's more like a two-hander in like one or two locations. Whereas we were doing this road trip, you know, we shot at Filmscape, so we're on like this volume stage for some of it. We were also we were also then obviously on location, the crew. We had some crazy situations where we got everyone like into the crew. We thought, okay, we're being very clever. We're going to have everyone staying on this farm in Willowmoor that we can shoot out different locations, but visually they look different, but they're actually all on the same place. Mm-hmm. And all the crew will also stay there. So we arrive there and the night we stay there, we get everyone to their location, to their accommodation. And when we had been there on the recce, we see, okay, these are only like a couple of kilometers away from each other. And it takes, you know, 10 minutes to get from this spot to the next spot. But now when we're actually on the farm with these heavy equipment trucks, now these dirt roads are now corrugated dirt roads because we have such heavy vehicles driving up and down. So now instead of taking 10 minutes to get from this place to another place, it takes half an hour or takes an hour. Then we didn't have, obviously now there's like a power outage. So we're like, okay, it's fine. We have generators, but the cell phone towers where that we were, you know, obviously relying on to speak to people are solar powered. So we're like, fantastic, doesn't matter that there's no electricity, but the batteries from the cell phone towers were stolen.
Oh God.
So then it's now like 10 o'clock at night, it's dark, everyone's hungry, we haven't sent out the call sheets, and how are we going to actually contact anyone and tell them what time to be on location the next morning? So, you know, there were those kind of things which maybe wouldn't happen if you were just shooting in Joburg around the corner. And there was wind and there was kudus running into vehicles. Not vehicles running over kudus. It literally was stationary vehicles that we had like kudus.
just going like, I don't know what it is, but I just need to run into this car.
It's a bit of a Gilmore Girls moment. I don't know if that's like literally there. Yeah. So there were some crazy situations like that would only happen when you are in the middle of nowhere. So that was stressful, but we had an unbelievable cast, an unbelievable crew that just made things work. And
it becomes a road trip for you. I actually think that's kind of cool.
Definitely.
That you actually, in your own head, are experiencing a road trip in Sutherland. So you're kind of on the same page as your characters.
Yeah. I think it was necessary in the end because I feel like the Karoo is a character of its own.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see in the film just the different landscapes and terrains. And like, I remember when we were actually shooting, the actresses came up to us and, you know, they kind of came up to me and they said, like, we understand now why you schlepped us all the way here just because, like, we couldn't have really done it anywhere else. So, I think it was important for us to go on this little road trip.
Yeah,
with all of its bumps and rocky place things along the way.
How did you find what then becomes quite a puzzle piece? I think you could maybe handle a smaller puzzle if it's a short film, but now you've got an even bigger puzzle. And what I mean by puzzle is because of these, you know, cell phones, towers out and issues, you've got to perhaps shoot this movie in different pieces, right? And so that's, I think, for me personally, that would be one of my biggest challenges as the director, to make sure I'm actually aware of specifically how these scenes are going to tie together.
Yeah.
Right? Because that, is that a challenge to you? Where do you, what are your sort of bigger sort of things to challenge, that challenge you when you're making a film?
Yeah, I think the kind of puzzle for this one, at least, like, well, firstly, going from a short film to a feature film, it's like, it was massive. And I think, as Gab mentioned, the team, like, we wouldn't have been able to do it without the incredible team. But also, I like to come as prepared as possible when filming. Obviously, being a comedy, there was a lot of room for improv, especially from the actors, for certain lines of dialogue, which made it difficult in the edit because then you're kind of sitting there like, oh, June von Merch is just like throwing out amazing lines of dialogue. Which one are we going to pick? But, you know, I'm very structured. So we were storyboarded. We were you know, very meticulous. And our first AD, Kurt Brooks, who came onto the project, is he was just phenomenal in scheduling it in a way that obviously everything was done out of order.
Yeah.
But
you could at least root yourself in those moments.
Exactly.
I know what I need to do here.
It made sense. It wasn't so fragmented that it was just like, how the hell are we going to do this? Especially when things get tough and you have to like cut moments or figure things out. It was very, it kind of like seemed, we were very lucky that it all kind of seemed on paper very clear.
Yeah. I think what also helped, this is bringing back some PTSD moments, is one of the scenes in the Karoo, our actress June van Meert was shooting something else and she had to actually fly back for like a night and then come back the next day or something. And because when we had driven the road before on the recce, took like an hour to get to the airport, and then the roads were worse, and she needed to like wrap an hour earlier, and she was in every scene that day. Yeah. But what helped us is, you know, as I said, mentioned, we co-wrote this, Geordie and I, with Marista van Eerden. And I remember when I was sitting in like the production, kind of makeshift production office, and we realized that, oh my word, she's going to have to leave. And this is on the day and Geordie's busy shooting. So I remember going to where they were shooting and chatted to Marista, also came on set. Mm. She was helping because this was obviously in Afrikaans, not our first language. So she was there if they do improvise. She was there as like a performance kind of director and assistant to Geordie.
Cool.
So if they were improvising, she could be kind of quick with Geordie and get us all back on the same page. And I went to Marista and I said, okay, we're going to have to get June out of the scene quick or do something. And this is what I'm thinking story-wise. And Marissa said, okay, well, what if we do this story-wise? And this is while Geordie was shooting something. And then I'm like, Geordie, and then, you know, pull him to the side. I'm like, okay, we're going to have to quickly make this decision.
It almost feels like TV writing.
Yeah.
It feels like something that the TV crew would do. You know, especially in those studio setups, you famously see those read-throughs of like those episodes of Friends. And then they hear, do people laugh? No, they don't laugh. And then they all huddle together and change it. And
so not ideal. And I think it's you know, you never want to be in that situation where you're like having to cut stuff because of a production or like a logistical something going wrong. But I think what was just really wonderful is that to have a team that you trust. And, you know, as from a production point, when I say to Geordie, like, she has to leave at this time, he knows we've done everything possible to make sure that, there's a trust, because it's very easy to, for one to just lose their temper in that moment, or for one to be like, well, I want to shoot the scene the way that we planned it. So I think
you can't be
it's an
precious.
Amazing rapport. Yeah.
That must be the other huge challenge of a director. Because I think you, as a producer, you constantly are in that mode. Mm. And you're constantly, you know, just by hook or by crook, I'm going to do this. Or I know what's real and I pick my battles and all those kinds of things. But more so for the director who has this vision that they want to get across.
Yeah, but I think
compromising could be really tricky.
Mm.
Yeah, it's different. But what I think what makes... like, and I'm jumping into a whole different topic now, but like, of like AI, but like, I think what makes films that are made by like real people different is the constraint and is the happy mistakes that happen on the day. You know, like there are a few of those moments that happen on this film where it's just like, wow, if we'd done it any different, like, I don't know how the scene would have worked, you know, and if everything was just perfect, it would be a very, very different film. But like, because the sun set, you know, we were running out of time for the day and the sun was setting, we had to shoot it in this particular light, which we hadn't planned for, but, you know, but it looks the way it does and it's beautiful because it was shot in that light, you know. So the constraints often make it what it is.
There was a lovely sports quote, which was the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
And it's like, it's the same with film.
Yeah.
But also I think it does go back to prep, is that if you are so prepped and you so on the same page, even with the DOP, because you've got your shot list, or you then develop the shorthand. So when you need to make a quick decision, you're all on the same page and you can quickly shift modes.
Yeah.
Whereas if you haven't prepared, you can't just go on set and be like, oh, whatever happens, happens, or the sun sets or whatever. Whereas like we went in knowing, you know your shot. So if you do need to cut something, then you know very quickly what can be cut or what can be combined. And you've had those conversations before.
Mm.
So you can shift on the day.
Totally.
Yeah.
What's keeping you busy now? Obviously, you've got to have your head in this product that you delivered last year, August. I always love the timelines of cinema. Is your head in other things? I would imagine.
Yeah, so we're trying to obviously push the cinema releases as best as possible, but we have a whole bunch of different docies and feature films and TV series that we're working on. We've got a really fantastic slate of very different projects. And I'm actually going to Cannes next month to try and have some meetings to see if we can get some co-productions going or get some funding on board some of the projects. So, okay.
And don't forget, we also shot a short film last year, which is...
Where's that little guy sitting right now?
So it actually premiered at Clermont-Ferrand in International Film Festival at the beginning of the year, is in Clermont-Ferrand in France.
Okay.
It is... I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, Jordi.
It's Clermont-Ferrand.
Yeah. There we go.
Good. Well done.
All my French.
So it's one of... the best short film festivals in the world. They have thousands of people coming just watching shorts. We queued for hours to get into some of these films. And that was actually wonderful. I'll summarize the story because we could do a whole podcast on that. But that was a concept that Jordi pitched at Talents Durban many years ago. And then we got funding to actually pitch the film at the La Petite Fabrique, the pitch forum that takes place in France at Clermont-Ferrand at the film festival. So we pitched it there. We came back. We then got NFEF and Gauteng Film Commission and PSP funding to make the film.
Okay.
And then we shot it last year straight after De Quicksilvers. And then it premiered there. And in the next few days, can I announce it?
Yeah,
yet?
I think you can announce it. It's being announced today.
This is going to be
the day before the release.
Okay, so then people will know now that it's going to have its South African premiere at DIFF.
Okay, lovely.
So that will be fantastic.
Cool.
And I think it's just interesting. I think our journey as Sanctuary Films is, you know, our first project under Sanctuary Films was a feature documentary. We then went and made two short fiction films. We then made this feature film, De Quicksilvers, that we're speaking about now. And then... we still made a short film, and people often ask, you know, why are you going back into shorts? You've done the feature, you know. And I think for us, the short, you know, as I mentioned, this wonderful journey, but also it's just a great way to play with cinema language in a short, in experiments in a short, shorter timeline. This has like a one-shot feel. It's very sound design heavy rather than music. It's a great place to play.
And what's this short called?
It's called Amazeze, which means
fleas. Which is fleas in isiZulu.
Fleas.
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 Yeah, it's about xenophobia.
Okay.
So a bit more of an issue film than this road trip comedy.
Lovely, but it just shows the diversity of it all. And so everything that you guys do as a partnership is under Sanctuary.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. And I think the kind of films that we're wanting to make, whether it's a road trip comedy or a kind of social impact film, is that we want to just have films that have some sort of catalyst for conversations.
Yeah.
You know, so we explore multiple genres, multiple formats, but ultimately we want to, you know, affect hearts and minds.
Yeah. How did you guys meet as a working relationship?
So when I was looking to start working on I Am Here, Gabby had just come back from doing her master's in the UK, and we met for a coffee, and I said to her, what do you know about producing? And she said, nothing. And I said, fantastic, let's go on this adventure together. And so Gabby came on board I Am Here, and we collaborated on that project for, I think it took us about 2 years.
I think what we thought would be 3 months was 3 years.
Yeah.
I Am Here is a documentary about a Holocaust survivor.
Yes.
Ella, who lives in Cape Town.
Exactly. Ella Blumenthal, who's now, I think, 103 years old.
Still alive. Still here.
Yeah, still here.
There's the opening sequence, but there's a great scene of her like striding on the promenade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so just what a cool character.
Yeah, so she's not striding on the promenade so much, but she's still here, and she's... You know, that's amazing. Whenever we go to Cape Town, we try and meet with her, and it's always just wonderful to see her.
What was your master's in?
Directing. Okay. Which is why when Jordy said, "What do you know about producing?" I said, "Well, I just did a master's in directing, so not much." But
where did you do that?
I did it at the Met Film School in London.
Okay.
And yeah, we knew each other socially. We had been on like kind of Jewish youth camps together. We'd both been involved in like the leadership and like organization of the youth camps. Not overlapping, but it's just interesting seeing the kind of skills that overlap with the film industry, especially from a production standpoint in terms of coordinating. You know, we had like 1,000 kids on a campsite for 3 weeks or a month that you're coordinating and very responsible for at a very, very young age.
I performed at one.
Yes.
Yes, you came to this one.
Was that the one?
Was that the one that you were the head of?
Something Kiva.
Banea Kiva, exactly.
Banea Kiva. Yeah. That was a fascinating afternoon.
Yeah.
It was part of a tour that a whole bunch of bands were doing across the country, and then we sort of plugged this in. It was us and Desmond and the Tutus.
Yes.
It was very interesting.
So we were there as counselors that year. Yeah,
I only noticed. Okay, so halfway through this performance, which was in the blaring sun.
Oh God!
But only halfway through the performance did I realize that there was the rope that was between the crowd, separating boys from girls, and that there was this like symbolic rope that had been sort of tied down the middle. And I was like, what the what is going on? And two of the members of Short Straw are Jewish, and so they explained it to me. But it was one of those like, this is interesting.
Yeah. So Banea Kiva is a bit more of a religious youth movement. And because on the camp there are counselors that are like in their 20s and older, then they may be more religious and may not want to have like mixed dancing. So the actual camp is a completely mixed camp, but there's some of those situations that...
I just found that interesting that like no doubt they're running into each other's dorms and
yeah, of course.
the word I grew up with was kerfuffling.
Yeah.
But to honor the culture and the tradition of it, one would do this in this moment, which I thought was very interesting. And I also thought it was interesting in the cafeteria that there were pictures of famous Jewish people just kind of stuck up with Prestick as a way, at least the way I sort of saw it being presented, was like, these are people you can be proud of. It was like Natalie Portman, and there were a bunch of it looked like the gesture was showing these impressionable kids at an impressionable age in their life who they could be proud of and who they could look up to as people in a Jewish community.
Yeah, like you can be proudly Jewish and a contributing member of society.
Yeah. No, I thought that was a fascinating afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys were the counselors.
Yeah, and we attended it in our youth as well. Like that's when we think of December, it was always like 3 weeks in Mossel Bay.
In a tent.
That's right, it was in Mossel Bay. That's where it was. Yeah, we played the Puma Happy Holiday summer tour, which stopped in Mossel Bay, and then someone was like, we can also have you at the school camp. And we were
amazing.
Like, cool. Okay, lovely. Okay, and then, so you've made this other short film, which will now get rolled out in DIFF. Are we journeying into something new in the production-wise? Are we about to?
So not officially. You know, last year we were filming a lot. We also shot a commercial. So we did like a feature short and commercial last year. And now we're just taking some time to write. We're doing a lot of writing, we're also collaborating with different writers who are kind of sharing their scripts, and we shopping them around and also like giving feedback and developing with them. So we really are taking time to be quite intentional with what our next steps are. As Jordy said, we love, we're not genre bound, and we also really loved our experience of making a documentary. So we're always juggling multiple projects.
Yeah. Can something like the commercial help float the writing time?
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. We wouldn't, because I think the industry just... for multiple reasons right now is in a really tricky place. And I think if we hadn't done this commercial last year, I think we would not be as relaxed as we are right now when it comes to the writing and like very slow development of projects, which I think is always great because if you're rushing, I feel like when you try and rush to get projects done, the end product is never really the same. So at least we're not under duress now, and we're still trying to get some projects going in a nice, slow, calm manner.
We have three more days until we living in a tent.
No, those are always the constraints of being a creative entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Let's try find you something to rent. Have you seen Sinners yet?
I have
big
not,
movie of the moment.
But I just saw the poster. I just saw the poster now walking in, and I said to Gubby,
I think you'll appreciate it. You know, we talk about how De Quicksilvers is this, you know, fun road trip comedy, but it's rooted in a lot of research, a lot of science, a lot of depth, which you have tried to inject into your story. This has got more to it. Sinners has more to it. Mm. It's not a schlocky, simple movie. It without giving too much away, the first half of it is like a sort of an Oscar drama, like a Color Purple, if Beale Street could talk. You know, it's like it's got all this kind of beautiful, grainy film, deep South kind of folklore to it. And then halfway through it, it becomes a popcorn movie. Amazing. While keeping its integrity, but it turns into a horror movie, like a thriller, like a vampire in every shape and form movie. But it's rooted in so much depth.
You're in it.
You're in it, and you really like give a shit. I wouldn't say the name because it was an exhibitor screening, and I can't talk about films I've seen as an exhibitor yet. But I watched this one horror where, like, halfway through it, I was like, I don't give a shit about these people.
Yeah, they can all die.
It's not rooted in something. They don't feel real to me. This is all just play. It's all done to just be schlocky horror. You know, so definitely I want to give you guys Sinners. Is there something else that you're in the mood for? Oh, if you've got Apple TV and you appreciate shrinking, try the TV show Trying. Have you heard of Trying?
No, I haven't.
British, and it's about a young couple living in like kind of cool Camden, London, and they want to have kids. And not giving too much away, but the first season is them trying to have a kid. When that fails, it's about them adopting.
Oh, wow.
And it's so lovable. It's the same as Shrinking. It's just like, oh, it's just so witty and it's smart. And it's just very similar radio station to what Shrinking is, but just British. So it's just that much drier, just that much more self-deprecating, that much more.
Amazing. Sounds fantastic.
Apple TV should sponsor you too.
Yeah.
Hunt them so much.
No, there's some good stuff there. Okay, so Trying for both of you and Sinners for both of you.
Cool.
That's what I'm renting you today. But guys, best of luck with everything and congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
I know it'll find its audience. It's lovely, and as you said, you want to see it in a cinema, you want to see it with people. That's really what it comes down to, is the watching with people. And so one chance is the Knitting Cinema, but then thereafter I just think it's so great that these films will live on in, you know, the platforms in South Africa.
Yeah.
And it'll be on the TV where it will just get to, you know, the towns like Sutherland, which, you know, aren't going to have these cinemas or film festivals, and they'll eventually get it. And so everyone will get a chance to see the film, which is great.
No, everyone must take a road trip to cinema and see it in cinema. if you don't have the time for the road trip, then you catch it on other platforms.
But it's also, I think it's also just releasing at a great time because there's also Mother's Day coming up, and this is... I think what's been fantastic seeing audience reception of this film and hearing feedback is everyone's found a character to relate to. You know, the four protagonists are these four women that are in their 80s. We've gotten a lot of comments about how this film has reminded people, you know, you're never too late to just grab life and live it. And and that was something, as Jordy said, we were inspired, you know, when we worked on the documentary with Ella, 98-year-old woman, so full of force. And when we worked with Lida Berta, just seeing this energy. So I think there's people that relate to it from seeing like their parents or grandparents and maybe this perception that they had of them, that's shifting. And then there's also obviously this older audience that's also resonated with it. We, you know, we've been in audiences where people are, someone said to me, when they weren't laughing, they were crying. And it was just wonderful to hear that this is, you know, this is a comedy. We have made a comedy, but at Sanctuary Films, we always have something that has a bit of a heart and might pull on the heartstrings. So this really is a film for everyone. And yes, it is in Afrikaans, and I think the Afrikaans community will love it, but don't be, it's not only for the Afrikaans community. It really should, you know, we've seen that it has resonated with all cultures. So
there's a person who's a, we call, you know, they're customers, just like you guys are customers of the video store. One of our favorite customers is a woman called Deborah Darling, who is also a very interesting figure for you guys to just know, and I must actually perhaps connect you guys with her, who in later in life, in her sort of silver era, her gray era, does her hair up all fabulously and found herself in this kind of personal renaissance that led to her actually being a model. And she's an influencer in the best, truest, most genuine sense of the term, and has just advocated for the fact that life doesn't stop. You haven't become this invisible, you know, women often speak of that, you know, happening at a certain point in their life where they become a bit gray, literally and figuratively, and sort of are lost in society, where she can stand out. And your characters also have this kind of Deborah Darling sensibility to them, which is very cool. The one thing I also want to say, another film that you guys can rent if you haven't seen it, is The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry. Have you heard about this movie?
No, I haven't even heard of it.
Smaller, cute little indie film. It's based on a book.
Yes, yeah.
Which is also like, it's a road trip in some sense, but he's walking. This man makes this pilgrimage. He needs to get to someone. I don't want to give too much away and get into it now, but it's beautiful and heartwarming. It's also just like, life is now. It's about living. It's about, I need to get there. I need to do this. I need to prove this to myself. It's a delightful movie. It's really one of the good little gems that are hiding in amongst all these other movies. Thank you, guys.
No, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having us. It was so lovely to chat
properly.
Yeah, no, and enjoy the film.
Yeah, thank you. No, very looking forward to screening it here. And just, yeah, it's must be a lovely feeling to just know that it's released, right? Sort of out of your hands, and it's just into the world for them to do what they want with it.
No, definitely.
So lovely. All the best with all of that. And we hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
All right, what a lekker chat, and really appreciate them taking the time to come and visit us here at The Video Store. Thank you for listening. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za. We have links over there to previous guest episodes, and so you can go straight to certain ones, and we've tried to break it down based on whether they're comedians or directors. Or actors. So we've got lots of directors in this case, and producers. So we add this chat to that collection. But also our social media. So just chime in and let us know about what you think about this chat and the stuff that we've spoken about. But we will be back again. So we'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.